Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Thanks for tuning in. We're not video streaming tonight, so if you're trying to find the picture, it's not there. We'll get back to it tomorrow evening. Stu sent me an email, and very interesting. I hope all your right-wing trolls that listen to the program will just file this away in your punkin' little heads. Stu writes, Mike, question number one that no one asks is, what percent of our enormous national debt was created under Republican presidents? Answer, over 90% of our national debt was created under the presidents Reagan, Bush 1, and Bush 2. As a matter of fact, these three Republican presidents never once had a balanced budget. All 20 years under their administrations, Reagan had 8, Bush 1 had 4, and Bush 2 had 8. Under all of their administrations, 20 years, they were all years without one balanced budget. One could even argue that the $5 trillion budget surpluses under the Clinton administration wipes out the $500 trillion that Jimmy Carter left in national debt. And that, drum roll, would make the Republicans responsible for 100% of the national debt. Obama's deficits? Well, they're really Bush 43's responsibility, since W. left Obama with a depression, two unfunded wars, and an unfunded drug benefit for Medicare. Will you talk about this on your radio show? Stu. Well, Stu, there's not a whole lot to talk about. You provided the statistics, and, of course, they're absolutely correct. But the people who will not believe that are legion. They are all the people who watch Fox News Channel, which is about 2.5% of the population. They are all Republicans. They are all teabag freaks. They're all conservatives. One thing, Stu, that these people can't stand is the truth. They can't handle it. So, and it's very convenient for these right-wing Republican, that would be all of them, half-assed politicians to try to dump this onto Barack Obama. 100% of the national debt, the trillions, are a result of Republican administrations. Ta-da! Well, listen, if you're unemployed, like Kathy and I were at the beginning of 2009, if you are unemployed now, and you're part of the 99 weekers, I think that's what our financial affairs correspondent refers to, not people who draw unemployment for 99 weeks and then the government cuts them off. If you're in that group, if you're in a group that your career was doing working in the manufacturing segment or sector of the U.S. economy until that was sold off. That's where maybe your father worked or your mother worked, and then you did it, and everybody made a pretty good living, but no longer. Anyway, if you are really at the limit right now, your mortgage payments are overdue. For some reason, all that glorious money that was going to help you get out from under this horrific burden just hasn't materialized. Your health insurance, the COBRA thing, is ready to run out. The Republicans are crushing you into the ground. The Democrats are not helping. Corporate America, the capitalists, are utterly and absolutely destroying our way of life. Well, guess what, Bubala? I have for you information regarding where the world's millionaires live. I figured you'd want to know. You see, according to DailyFinance.com, global wealth made a remarkable comeback last year, increasing by 11.5% to a total of $111 trillion dollars. That's according to a new report, the Boston Consulting Group's Global Wealth 2010 report, released today by Boston Consulting Group. The report breaks down wealth by region and by country, creating a geographic portrait of where the world's wealth is accumulated. Ta-da! North America! Which, of course, includes Canada and Mexico, doesn't it? Isn't Mexico in North America? Yeah, Norte Americanos, okay, it's not. North America posted the largest absolute gain in households with assets under management. Its wealth totaled $4.6 trillion, which is a 15% jump over 2008. The largest percentage gain occurred in Asia Pacific, where wealth skyrocketed by 22%, or $3.1 trillion. That's nearly double the global rate. Latin American households' assets rose by 16% to $3.4 billion. And Europe, despite the massive debt problems it now faces, was the wealthiest region with more than $37 trillion in assets under management. Ta-da! One more juicy tidbit here. The number of millionaire households rose by 14% in 2009 to 11.2 million. And the United States, God bless us, had by far the most millionaire households with 4.7 million. Can I hear an amen? I can't hear you. Can I hear an amen? I still can't hear you. We're number one. We're number one. We're number one. Jesus God. Now, if that doesn't cheer you up, I don't know. I don't know how we're going to get you cheered up in the rest of the program. I thought you would be happy to hear that. I know I was. I was very happy to hear that I live in a country where the top one-tenth of 1% is just getting wealthier and wealthier while the rest of us are holding on by our fingernails, toenails, knuckles, teeth, some part of our anatomy. But the wealthy, they're doing great. Thank you very much. They're doing just wonderfully. Just wonderfully. And it's not just here. South Asia, Latin America, Europe, ta-da! Africa, not so good. Very interesting little tidbit here. This is Sam Smith blogging at Progressive Review. Sam writes, the present and the former Democratic presidents of the United States, Obama and Clinton, actively challenged the major labor union-backed candidate for U.S. Senator from Arkansas. And then they bragged about it when their candidate won. A senior White House official told Politico's Ben Smith, quote, organized labor, ha, 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 just flushed $10 million of their members' money down the toilet on a pointless exercise, ha, ha, ha. Not too long ago, this would have been, for a Democratic official, a criminal offense. But the contemporary Democratic Party's list of periodic targets includes not only labor unions, but school teachers. That would be raced to the top. Seniors, the assault on Medicare and Social Security. The middle class, saving banks, but soon to be, not soon to be, foreclosed homes. The young, jailed for minor drug offenses and sent sometimes repeatedly to fight in useless wars, and civil liberties, wiretapping, and other constitutional attacks. In short, it is fair to say that the Democratic Party now treats as foes or with contempt many of the very constituencies that led to its periods of greatness. Democratic Party, rest in peace. God bless you. We knew you way back when. Don't stand there.
Wiser, the union forever defending our radio right from the left. It's More Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. According to Iranian Press TV, which, by the way, you can watch anytime you want to. They have live feeds. Go to PressTV.com. According to Press TV, a group of Jewish activists in Germany are preparing to send an aid ship to the Gaza Strip, which has been under an Israeli-imposed blockade for 3 years. The group, which is the German branch of the European Jews for a Just Peace, plans to send the aid ship by the end of July. In a statement, the group said today, Kate Katzenstein-Leiterer, a member of the executive committee of the group, said today, quote, "We want to break the Gaza occupation and end the occupation of the West Bank as well. We as Jews want to bring the Palestinians something other than bombs," end quote. The ship will be carrying school supplies, musical instruments, children's clothing, and other children's items that Israel has forbidden. According to Spiegel Online, a German newspaper, also sweets and chocolates, about 16 people will be aboard the vessel. However, activists from around the world are sending requests to join the group, including volunteers from Israel. European Jews for a Just Peace has been collecting funds for the aid ship since 2008. Edith Lutz, another member of the European Jews for a Just Peace, said that the group was in contact with Israeli officials. She was quoted by the French news agency as saying, "We are in contact with the Israeli government and the embassy in Berlin. We informed them a while ago. However, the group is concerned over the possibility of an Israeli attack on the ship." And then the rest of this article is about the Israeli attack on the Gaza flotilla. And then this, a little bit more information, European Jews for a Just Peace. They gathered last Friday, 18 European grassroots Jewish peace groups gathered in Amsterdam to found a new pan-European organization of Jews who oppose the Israeli occupation and seek a just peace in the Middle East. Attending the conference were delegates from groups in Belgium, Denmark, England, France, Italy, the Netherlands, Sweden, and Switzerland, some of which were formed during this second intifada, while others have been active for more than 20 years. The newly formed organization, called European Jews for a Just Peace, plans to reach out to and speak to the greater public in the name of the large numbers of European Jews who are dissatisfied with Israeli policies toward the Palestinians. In particular, it hopes to demonstrate the diversity of opinion within the European Jewish community, which has lately seen anti-Semitic attacks launched not only by non-Jews, but also by, quote, mainstream, end quote, Jews against other Jews who have criticized Israeli policies. And they have a declaration, to wit, "We believe that the only way out of the current impasse is through an agreement based on the creation of an independent and viable Palestinian state and the guarantee of a safe and secure Israel and Palestine. This requires an immediate end of the occupation of the occupied territories, including West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem, with recognition of the 4th of June, 1967 borders. A complete withdrawal of all Jewish settlements in all the occupied territories. The recognition of the right of both states to have Jerusalem as their capital. The recognition by Israel on its part in the creation of a Palestinian, the recognition by Israel of its part in the creation of the Palestinian refugee problem. Israel should recognize in principle the Palestinian right to return as a human right. This practical solution to the problem will come about by agreement between parties based on just, fair, and practical considerations. It will include compensation, the return to the territory of the state of Palestine or of Israel without endangering Israel's existence. Well, we call upon the international community, especially Europe, for political and financial support." And then the list of signatories is quite impressive. So, European Jews for a Just Peace. If you want more information, you can Google that. European Jews for a Just Peace. And I report those last two stories with the deepest respect. My argument, as I've said a million times, is not against Judaism to any extent greater than my argument against all religion. My argument, my outrage, my fury is against the state of Israel. And I've said before on this program, as long as any state on this planet commits the kinds of human rights atrocities as the state of Israel commits against the Palestinians, I will speak out about it. It matters not to me what country it is. I don't care if they consider themselves to exist because of the hand of God. It doesn't make any difference to me. Right? And if you are a just person, you feel the same way. The vitriol that you hear on this program is against Israel, not against Jews. And apparently there are an awful lot of Jews globally that feel the same way. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Extended stay. Those were final orders to come down that day. Waiting to be saved, the Philippines. Wait forever for the young Marines. Now I believe to be here is right, but I have to say that I'm
before the hour, at the MondoWeiss.net blog, this by Paul Woodward. On May 31st, Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu described the actions of IDF soldiers who had conducted the raid on the Mavi Marmara, killing at least 9 of its passengers, as, quote, a clear case of self-defense because as our soldiers were inspecting these ships, they were attacked, they were almost lynched, they were attacked with clubs, with knives, perhaps with live gunfire, and they had to defend themselves. They were going to be killed, end quote, Benjamin Netanyahu. That was before a video emerged, which, by the way, you can now see at MikeMalloy.com. A video emerged appearing to show two Israeli soldiers first pummeling with their boots and then shooting one of the victims as he lay at their feet. To stand above an injured man and then finish him off with rounds from an assault rifle can, by no one's estimation, be described as an act of self-defense. Paul Woodward says, I have asked the IDF spokesman's office for comment on the video and been told they will get back to me in due course. An explanation from the IDF is unlikely to be swift because a decision on how to handle this matter is now likely to rise above the military ranks to the highest political level. The Netanyahu government's political strategy for grappling with the latest international crisis it has triggered has been rooted from its inception in the outlook that molds the Israeli psyche. Whatever happens, Israel is always the victim. Out of a national unwillingness to rise above this unremitting sense of victimization, Israel's leaders and its population have rendered themselves incapable of accepting responsibility for their own actions. And right now there are at least two Israeli soldiers who could step forward, break their silence, and act in the greater interest of the country they've pledged to defend. But don't look for that to happen. First, that would require an unusual amount of personal courage. But anyone who shoots an injured man who is lying helplessly at his feet seems lacking in courage. And secondly, most individuals who follow military commands do so on the assumption that it's not for them to determine the national interest. Indeed, the orders these particular soldiers have been instructed to follow almost certainly include that they now maintain their silence. And us, so far, well, the United States, under President Obama's morally drifting leadership, the United States has maintained its traditional role in acting like Israel's lawyer. But even the best defense lawyer realizes when the evidence against their client makes a not guilty plea untenable. Moreover, every lawyer knows that they can only go so far in loyally defending their client. Past a certain point, a loyal attorney becomes a criminal accomplice. It's time for Washington to tell Tel Aviv it needs to get ready to tell the truth, the whole truth, nothing but the truth, about the Mavi Marmara massacre. That story's completely disappeared, hasn't it? Huh? It's still active in the European press, but you hear nothing in the American media. Wonder why? I wonder why. In Afghanistan, southern Helmand province, the religious crazy people there, the Taliban militants, accused a 7-year-old boy of spying and hanged him. Executed him. Provincial government spokesman Daoud Ahmadi confirmed the incident, which took place on Tuesday in the Taliban stronghold of Sanjin in Helmand province. Ahmadi told CBS News' Fazul Rahim the boy was hanged in public after a Taliban commander read a verdict out loud accusing the 7-year-old of spying for international forces. A local resident in the remote village of Sang-e-Hisar in the Sangin Valley tells CBS News he witnessed the hanging. The man says three militants brought the boy before a crowd of about 150 people, read the short verdict, and then hanged him from a tree. The youngster, the 7-year-old, was the grandson of a respected local elder, the resident tells CBS. According to the villager, the Taliban have intensified their campaign of intimidation in the area in recent months. A Taliban source in Helmand told CBS News Sami Yousafzai on Thursday, today, that he was aware of the boy being killed, but that it was a case of a militant settling a personal vendetta against the boy's family and then using the spying charges as an excuse. And this hanging comes as a Taliban commander in neighboring Kandahar province, which is the Taliban's traditional home territory, tells CBS News that a suicide attack on a wedding party that left 40 people dead yesterday was collective punishment for villagers standing up to the Islamic militants' control in the region. And this is a country in which we have how many tens of thousands of soldiers now? And wasn't it George W. Bush, the lying bastard that squatted in the White House for 8 years? Wasn't it Bush who told us, oh, well, we freed the Afghan people. We freed 30 million people. And we defeated the Taliban. They are defeated. A 7-year-old kid. I tend to believe the first part of the story, which is, I mean, either way you look at it, it shows the difference in the way of life in that country as opposed to, say, oh, I don't know, the United States. And I think it shows even further the reason that we have absolutely no hope in trying the old Vietnam tactic of winning the hearts and minds of the Afghan people. It's not going to happen, but what will happen will be the continuation of Afghan civilians murdered and American soldiers killed and wounded and made crazy. And Barack Obama has taken over as, this is his war now. This is not Bush's war. This is Barack Obama's war. Barack Obama has turned out to be the person that guarantees that, and I've said this before, that I will never, under any circumstances, vote Democratic again. ever. What a disaster this man really turned out to be. General McChrystal, by the way, today, the top U.S. commander in Afghanistan, today said that winning support, you know, the hearts and minds from local leaders, was proving tougher than expected. Yeah, I guess so. McChrystal admitted that preparations for perhaps the most critical operation of the war, the campaign to take control of Kandahar, Taliban's birthplace, weren't going as planned. Oh, no, it's not going as planned. Yes, but Mr. McChrystal, oh, I'm sorry, General McChrystal, when does a war ever go as planned? When? Give me an example, General McChrystal. And for those of us, when Obama and McChrystal laid out their plans to continue the murder and mayhem in Afghanistan, those of us who said this is insane, it's not going to work. And a lot of you right-wing punk asses sent me emails or called in here about, oh, well, you hate America, don't you? Well, now your general is saying the same thing. Not only is it not going as planned, it's never going to go as planned. It will continue to be a killing machine for Afghan civilians. What are we in? 9 years now, right? Eight, seven, eight. A killing machine for Afghan civilians, a killing machine, a butcher machine for American soldiers. Jesus. The day before McChrystal revealed his Kandahar delay, according to the Washington Post, his boss, Defense Secretary Robert Gates, said that the U.S.-led coalition has until the end of the year to show progress in the war and to prove to the United States and its allies that their forces have broken a stalemate with the Taliban. Gates said yesterday during a visit to London to meet with British leaders, you know, he's over there begging them not to withdraw. Oh, they won't. Gates said, quote, all of us, for our publics, are going to have to show by the end of the year that our strategy is on the right track and making some headway. End quote. Man, stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. To tell the ones who hear no sound, whose sons are living in the ground, peace on earth. Jesus, in the song you wrote, the words are sticking in my throat, peace on earth. Hear it every Christmas time. And history won't rhyme, so what's it worth? This peace on earth. Peace on earth. Peace on earth. Peace on earth.
Don't go to bed angry. Let Mike Malloy do it for you.
It's about 10 before the hour. MDM, who writes, Mr. Mike, I wrote you several weeks ago asking you about my finding it hard to vote for the wimp Harry Reid. You read my email in the air and you said in essence, hey man, we got to keep a Democratic majority, pal. So now I just heard you say you would never vote Democratic again. Just wondering if you could expand on your statement. Thanks. Yeah, it's called an evolution in political thought. Doesn't that happen with you, MDM, or do you adopt a position and never, ever, 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 ever change? Right?
Well, just to be fair, you have vacillated on this position on occasion. saying you would never vote for a Democrat again and then saying you will support this Democrat.
Did you just send me that email?
No, but I just wanted to clarify that, you know, not all Democrats are created equal. And I share your complete frustration and disappointment with Barack Obama. However, I heard James Carville tonight say that he has hope.
That
Obama next week will actually do some real ass kicking and take over from BP. I just want to know,
Carville has smoked way too much reefer.
I just want to know who gave BP the permission and continues to give them the permission, this foreign company, to order around U.S. military. I asked the question last night. Finally, CNN is asking the question today. Who is telling BP, yeah, it's okay, you give orders to our Coast Guard, give orders to the military to keep the reporters out?
Now you know why I will never vote Democratic again. It's very simple, my dear. We all saw the video today, if you missed it. It was a CNN crew that was trying to take a video footage of a bird recovery facility and what was going on inside. They were first approached by a spokes geek from BP, and then a U.S. Soldier with sergeant's chevrons on his hat. And the CNN crew was on, first of all, they were on public property, A. B, they have been given permission by the Louisiana Department of Natural Resources, I guess, to go ahead and shoot whatever video they wanted to shoot. Well, first a BP rep comes up and tells them more or less to get the hell off the premises. And when the CNN people started to debate that, then the U.S. military comes in. And, of course, Kathy's question is a valid one. But the answer is equally valid. Who is the commander-in-chief? His name is Barack Obama. The soldier gave an order to a news crew to get the hell out of there and stop taking video on the orders of BP. Now, there is all this garbage talk from this retired. Is he retired? I guess he, I don't even know. The Coast Guard Admiral. And President Obama, using the word, or the phrase, kick ass, or where to put his foot up whose ass, and, you know, so on and so forth, is nonsense. It's nonsense. BP will dictate the terms of a number of things, including the coverage. It will not change. This is the corporatization of this country, that on this program I have been warning and screaming and chewing the furniture about for 5 years. So when it finally becomes crystal clear, and this is not new, go back and read Smedley Butler's essay that became a book entitled War is a Racket. The U.S. military has been used by corporate America for a century, more than a century. So what's the big surprise that the U.S. military is now taking orders from BP? The U.S. military has taken orders from United Fruit. It has taken orders from other international American-based companies for over a century. So what's the big deal? Are some of you people just waking up? Oh, how could this be? So to MDM, when you are given the choice between Satan and dumb people, you normally choose the dumb people. So, and I use the term Satan in a metaphorical sense. I don't believe that garbage. Oh, God. Did you send that email? I don't deny that I've said vote for the Democrat many times. I've said hold your nose and vote for the Democrat. I've said stick a cork in your body orifices and vote for the Democrat so that you don't, you know, mess all over yourself. But that's it. I mean, you can only go so far until finally you say, wait a second. What am I doing? Look, folks, I don't want to give you a news flash. You can get this information from Brad Blog for the past 5 years. And you could have gotten this information on your own all the way back in 2000. Our political system is dead. Our system of electing people is a myth. It's a mirage. Don't you get that? Do you still really think that when you walk into that voting booth and push a touch screen or pull a lever that your vote actually goes the way you want it to go? You can't be that ignorant. This is the Malloy program. Now, let me clarify this. I'll never vote Democratic again. I have been what is referred to in the South as the yellow dog Democrat. You show me a Democrat up against a Republican, I would always vote Democrat. I've said this before, but it apparently needs a clarification here. I will vote the candidate. If the candidate happens to be a Democrat, that's secondary to what the candidate, just like we've had, Marcy Winograd on this show repeatedly. She's a Democrat. She was defeated. She's a Democrat. I would vote for Marcy Winograd in a heartbeat. Not because she's a Democrat. Hell no. But because of her political stance, her point of view, her political point of view. So just so you know, so that, you know, come election time, if I say, well, I'm voting for this person, and you go, well, but that's a Democrat. You said you'd never vote Democratic. Surely you can make the separation. Well, maybe you can't. It doesn't matter anyway. Chuck writes, Mike, I was listening to your show tonight while driving home, and you said the U.S. military has been getting its orders from corporations for 50 years. Yeah, I did. That was last night. Please read War is a Racket, speech by General Smedley Butler. He says the U.S. military has been corporate-run since the late 1800s. That's well over 100 years. In the last 50 years, the U.S. military has been getting its marching orders from multinational corporations. Chuck, in his last name. Yeah, I've talked about Smedley Butler, two-time Congressional Medal of Honor winner, several times. Thanks, Chuck. Two senators, Jeff Sessions and John Kyle, who criticized Supreme Court nominee Alina Kagan for having expressed personal opinions in memos she wrote as a clerk for Justice Thurgood Marshall this afternoon. They brought this up. The senators have criticized Alina Kagan because A, she's female, and B, she's Jewish. No, that's not right. They criticized her for having described policies as, quote, sensible and, quote, well-intentioned. That's what they criticized her for. And for having on multiple occasions used the phrase, I think, or I believe. These are the kind of senators we have. John Kyle said, the problem with these bench memos is that they reveal time and time again an effort to reach a certain result in the case. My God. The President of People for the American Way, Michael Keegan, responded thus, quote, Senators Sessions and Kyle have apparently reached a new level of desperation in their effort to smear Elena Kagan, making petty claims that rely on the same ridiculous double standard that they have embraced throughout the confirmation process. If the senators object to so-called results-oriented judging, perhaps they should look into the records of Justices Roberts and Alito, who in cases like Citizens United versus the FEC and Ledbetter versus Goodyear have gone out of their way to overturn established law and make new rules in order to achieve their desired results. And I might add that those desired results, of course, have been to shore up, as if they needed shoring up, corporate America in its assault on individual or human rights. Back to Michael Keegan's statement. He said, quote, the Roberts Court has been aggressively pushing its own political agenda at the expense of the rights of individual Americans. Senators Kyle and Sessions seem very happy with the results they've gotten from a far-right court. They need to find a new talking point, end quote. Well, they won't. And as far as Alito and Roberts are concerned, they are Supreme Court justices not because they were nominated by George W. Bush, but because they were confirmed by Democrats. That's why. So it's all well and good to, as Michael Keegan has done, I'm not busting up on Michael Keegan, it's well and good for him to criticize the idiocy of Sessions and Kyle, but I'm sure that during the confirmation process of these two proto-fascists, that People for the American Way advocated against their confirmation. And how many Democratic senators refused to filibuster their nomination? All of them. So, to the extent that the U.S. Supreme Court is right-wing, far right-wing, the blame for this rests squarely on the Democratic members of the United States Senate. Because George W. Bush and Bill Clinton and George Herbert Bush, of course, and Reagan, of course they nominated neo-fascists. Of course they did. Jesus God. But it's up to the Senate to confirm or deny. And the rules in the Senate are very explicit. The filibuster rule was used many times to stop the advancement of civil rights or human rights in this country. So given a chance to stop the rightward plunge of the U.S. Supreme Court, the Democrats dropped back 10 yards, as they always do, and punted. To hell with Democrats. To hell with them. To hell with them. I'm sick of them. Aren't you? If you're a progressive or a Democrat or a liberal, aren't you sick of it? Aren't you tired of it? Huh? You're not? You're okay with it? Okay. Me, I'm sick of it. So. The Surrendercrats. I think that's Bart Cops. From Maryland in Portland, Oregon, Mike, a few interesting stats regarding Israel and Palestine. Since September 29th, 1990, one Israeli is being held by Palestine. 7,382 Palestinians are currently imprisoned by Israel. Israel currently has 223 Jewish-only settlements and outposts built on confiscated Palestinian land. Palestinians do not have any settlements on Israeli land. 124 Israeli children have been killed by Palestinians, and 1,441 Palestinian children have been killed by Israelis since September 29, 1990. 1,072 Israelis and at least 6,348 Palestinians have been killed since September 29, 1990. Zero Palestinian homes have been demolished by Palestinians. 24,145 Palestinian homes have been demolished by Israel since 1967. U.S. military aid to Israel continues at the rate of $7 million a day. Military aid from the United States to Palestine is zero. The Rachel Curry ship is referred to by the Israelis as Linda, its former name. They cannot mention the bulldozer death of Rachel Curry, who was trying to prevent the destruction of a Palestinian home. Stats available through the website If Americans Knew, which was founded by a woman named Allison Weir, W-E-I-R, which is not exactly an Irish name, is it? If Americans Knew. A little bit more on Allison Weir and If Americans Knew when we come back. I'm Mike Malloy.
America, one flying monkey at a time. It's More Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. All right, so this organization, If Americans Knew, founded by Allison Weir, who listed those stats sent to me by Marilyn in Portland, Oregon, some criticism of If Americans Knew, the website. Former New York Times public editor, remember him, Daniel Okrent, stated that, quote, representatives of If Americans Knew expressed the belief that unless the New York Times assigned equal numbers of Muslim and Jewish reporters to cover the conflict, Jewish reporters should be kept off the beat, end quote. And he said he found that profoundly offensive. Allison Weir denied this, indicating that If Americans Knew had suggested that the Times team of reporters and editors covering Israel-Palestine be as diverse as possible. Okrent, former New York Times public editor, also stated that, quote, representatives of If Americans Knew earnestly believe that the information they present to be true and refuse to accept evidence that contradicts their beliefs, end quote. Allison Weir, the founder of the website, says that the organization had an extensive meeting with Mr. Okrent, during which they presented their findings that the Times covered Israeli deaths in far greater numbers than Palestinian deaths, had explained their findings to him and methodology in considerable detail, and, quote, gave him copies of the 23-page report along with approximately 40 pages of supporting documentation, end quote. Okrent, Allison Weir says, did not address their findings. The Anti-Defamation League has called If Americans Knew, one of several, quote, anti-Israel organizations, end quote. And the ADL further asserts that, quote, Weir's criticism of Israel has at times crossed the line into anti-Semitism, end quote. The ADL cited Weir's use of a quotation by Israel Shahak that characterized beliefs of certain Israelis as, quote, such a ruthless and supremacist faith, end quote. Ms. Weir herself stated that she considered this quote, this quoted characterization, as not pertaining to the mainstream of Judaism and has demanded that the ADL correct what she termed, quote, defamatory and inaccurate statements, end quote. The findings by this organization, If Americans Knew, has also been criticized by the Committee for Accuracy in Middle East Reporting in America, that's the organization CAMERA, for what is called, quote, selective and biased use and interpretation of information, end quote, and, quote, flawed methodology, end quote. See what the sons of bitches do? Do you see what they do, these watchdog gatekeeping organizations? As soon as somebody who happens to be Jewish starts putting the truth out, that person is immediately attacked. They're attacked as being anti-Semitic or a self-hating Jew. They're attacked as using selective and biased information. They're attacked for using flawed methodology. I'll tell you what, you count the number of corpses, and then you present the findings, and then you ask somebody else to go count them, to verify what you're about to report, and then you report it. Is that flawed methodology? Is it anti-Semitism? Good Lord. I wonder how the ADL and the rest of these organizations are going to respond to the European Jews who have decided to put together a blockade-busting boat from Europe. Huh? What do you think? Are they going to board that one and arrest people? Regarding the corporations dictating U.S. military action, GR, our Hopi friend in Arizona writes, well, who do you think it was who wanted all us engines exterminated off the face of this continent anyway? You think it was the United States government? Or do you think it was the corporations who couldn't wait to spew out into the West and exploit every last thing living and dead for profit? The military has been doing corporate dirty work since the very beginning. Greed is universal and timeless. GR. And Bruce writes that regarding who gives BP the permission to run the government, all those embedded Cheney operatives in the government are giving BP permission. They are giving orders passed down from Cheney. Obama is not in their chain of command. Well, that may be true, but if it is true, and it also involves the military, and the commander-in-chief either does not have the courage to tell the military to stay the hell away from a CNN news crew, then the commander-in-chief ought to resign and go back to being a lecturer at some top-flight university.
Promises are snapped into words are meant to bear. Bigger, better, stolen from Japan. Collective.
25 before the hour. Tom writes, Mark, I thought the executives of Halliburton are currently giving the orders in Afghanistan and Iraq, and Obama simply falling in line with unspoken options for personal benefit once out of office. And it ain't too much reefer old James Scarville smoking that's rotting his brain. It's the scotch and bourbon. If 6% of American farmland was planted in hemp, there would be no need for petroleum at all, so please take it easy on hemp. Thanks, Tom and Joshua Tree. Well, I know Tom knows this. There's a big difference between hemp and reefer. So I always take it easy on hemp. I mean, on both. You know, on both. And, of course, you probably heard this today. Researchers in Houston studying the flow of oil, the gusher from that blown-out well at the bottom of the Gulf, they said today that as much as twice the amount of oil than previously declared by BP may have been spewing into the sea since that oil rig exploded nearly 2 months ago. This is the third time the feds have had to increase its estimate of how much oil is gushing. And we're to believe, you see, if you buy the official corporate story and the official Obama administration story, that British Petroleum just simply does not have someone who can look at their own video and say, son of a bitch, that's 40,000 barrels a day. They don't have anyone like that. Do they? According to these researchers in Houston, the spill, the gusher before June 3rd when a riser was cut and then a cap put on it, isn't that working out? The gusher was flowing at a daily rate that could possibly have been as high as 2.1 million gallons, twice the highest number the feds had been saying. This is according to the U.S. Geological Survey Director, Marcia McNutt, who's coordinating these estimates. The estimates are not near complete yet, though, and different scientific teams have come up with different numbers. A new team from the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute came in with higher estimates than all the others. At Woods Hole, they estimate the range between 1 million and 2.1 million gallons a day. That was based on calculations of pressure. And if the high end of the Woods Hole estimate is true, that means the oil spill is about to reach the 100 million gallon mark since the explosion that killed 11 workers. The lies just continue. The lies of commission by BP and the lies of omission, or the lies of conspiracy, co-conspiracy, by those officially speaking for the Obama administration. And of course, in the Times today, it's on their website anyway, the efforts to limit the flow of news from this gusher. A pilot wanted to take a photographer from a newspaper, the Times-Picayune in New Orleans, to snap photographs of the oil slicks blackening the water. The response from a BP contractor who answered the phone at the command center's permission denied. The woman who owns Southern Seaplane with her husband said, and they're going to fly this photographer out. She said, we were questioned extensively. Who was on the aircraft? Who did they work for? The minute we mentioned media, the answer was, nope, not allowed. What? Representatives of a foreign corporation telling American news media people that they cannot take a photograph, they cannot shoot video, they cannot interview people? Where in the hell do you think we live, truth seeker? Huh? Is it not clear enough yet to you? Huh? What do you need? What do you need upside your head? A mule kick? A sledgehammer? Do you not get it? All the raving nonsense you've heard on this program all these years, do you not get it? This is a corporatocracy. This is a neo-fascist state. The United States of America. My God! What does it take? The teabaggers are sick bastards. I mean, it takes more than a mule kick. It would take a head removal for some of these people, a head transplant. But you, come on, truth seeker. Not you. I know you know about it. I'm talking about the other person over there listening. BP, British Petroleum. Oh, and by the way, they have... The Prime Minister of the UK, I believe, or the head of BP in the UK, or somebody back in the motherland, is kind of, sort of, maybe, possibly demanding that we stop bitching about BP. Because the longer we bitch about this and make a big deal about it, you see, BP stock, according to these people, is driven down. It's not driven down because people are bitching about it. It's driven down because of the liability that BP is going to face. Anyway, BP executives in the UK today, or in England today, said, look, we'll cut you a deal, Americans. Stop complaining about what our company did. It's the fourth largest corporation in the British Isles. Leave us alone. And I'll tell you what we'll do. We won't declare a dividend this quarter. We'll, but you gotta stop complaining. Don't you Americans realize how many retirement funds in the UK are chock-a-block with BP stock? You know what you're doing, America? You are ruining a decent retirement for all of our civil service workers over here, and our retired school teachers, our retired cops, and our retired this, and our retired that. Stop complaining. God damn it, you have the East Coast and the West Coast. So the Gulf is ruined. So what? You know what's going to happen next? The new PM of the UK is going to get on the blower to Barack Obama. It's my understanding they haven't even talked about this. He's going to get on the blower. He's going to say, Mr. President. Yes, Mr. Prime Minister. Mr. President, I need to warn you that if your rinky-dink media keeps doing this, keeps trying to report on this stuff, if you keep talking about planting your size 11s up somebody's ass, if this keeps up, you know what we're going to do? What, Mr. Prime Minister? We're going to pull out of Afghanistan. Ooh, okay, we'll be quiet. I'm serious, Mr. President. Oh, I know you are, Mr. Prime Minister. Scientists have complained about the trickle of information that has emerged from BP and government sources. Well, but this is the United States. We are decidedly anti-science here. We don't believe in science. Little spooks and elves and fairies and gremlins did this. Or was it the North Koreans? Science schmience. This is God's will. It's in the book of Revelation. Hallelujah, we're in the end times. And the sea shall spew forth stuff. Right? Isn't that in Revelation somewhere? Representative Ed Markey, Democrat from Massachusetts, who fought BP to release more video from the underwater rovers, said, quote, I think they've been trying to limit access. It's a company that was not used to transparency. It's not used to having public scrutiny of what it did, end quote. Well, Representative Markey, that's because of lawmakers like you. because you roll over and you put your feet up in the air. I realize you're a nice, wonderful Democrat, but you roll over, Mr. Markey, and you put your feet up in the air and you ask for somebody to scratch your belly, preferably with a checkbook. Hell no, BP's not going to be transparent. Who is? Is Massey Energy going to be transparent? Is Goldman Sachs going to be transparent? Yeah, right. Who would be, Mr. Markey? Huh? How about ExxonMobil? Do you know those cases from the oil spill are still in court? Stay with us. It is 10 before the hour. Email from Martin in San Francisco. Mike, you're the only one I've heard who regularly uses the four-letter word capitalism. Bravo. It's become a taboo word. Use it too much and they will think you're a godless socialist. But you don't need to be a Marxist to realize that whether it's oil companies, insurance companies, the banks, the defense industry, big pharma, coal companies, all our economic and environmental crises can be laid at the feet of America's capitalist class and their pursuit of maximum short-term profit, all at the expense of the public, the taxpayer, the consumer. In a word, at the expense of all who must work for a living to provide not only for ourselves, but for these scum-sucking social parasites. The more the working people are put wise to the nature of the capitalist system and the people who run and control it, the closer we will be to finally organizing to change our system to one of economic democracy and just rewards for those who actually work for a living and produce the products and services we all need. The capitalists are parasites who claim they provide for us when the truth is quite the opposite. We who work provide for them. P.S. May I recommend anything written by Michael Parenti, my favorite political writer of late? Yeah, we quote his stuff a lot of times, Martin. His latest volume is God and His Demons, an excellent primer, on the crimes of organized religion of all stripes, especially the fundamentalists. Parenti is an anti-capitalist who regards capitalism and fundamentalist religion as the lethal combination of our times, the guns and alcohol of our socioeconomic fabric. And I couldn't agree more. Regarding Obama resigning if he doesn't control the chain of command, Bruce writes, Obama resigning wouldn't help. The top people in the military are all nominated by the president and confirmed by the Senate. These would be people in place by Cheney, and see Obama as a temporary hindrance. They won't disobey a direct order, but they will interpret their orders according to their training. Now, Obama could order a new training day, but he isn't going to admit he's not in control unless somebody does something blatant that can't be ignored. After Obama has replaced most of the flag officers as they age out, maybe things will change, but that would take most of two terms. From Prairie 2, Bruce. Well, but Obama is still the commander-in-chief, and there is a chain of command that stops with him. You know, let's think about I know I'm reaching into the Wayback Box here, but let's think about Douglas MacArthur, who was, you know, I think he was nominated for a fourth star by Roosevelt. And confer a fifth star, I think, in the case of MacArthur. And who fired him? Truman. Truman fired him. Because, depending on how you want to read history, MacArthur wanted, during the, was it Korean War? I guess it was the Korean War. MacArthur was advocating the dropping of nuclear bombs on China because the Chinese were assisting. I'm not laughing about the Korean conflict. God forbid, 54,000 Americans died. And untold numbers, it's always untold numbers when there are people in Southeast Asia, right? Untold members of a Korean society, a lot of whom were killed by American troops, South Koreans. There was some, that, you know, that is a dark chapter, a closed chapter, completely sealed off. You don't know anything about the Korean conflict. Nothing. I'm not talking to Prairie 2. Just tossing it into the ether. We, wrong pronoun, we don't know anything about the Korean conflict. Seriously. Think about what do you know about what happened on the Korean Peninsula that began that August day in 1950 and ended with an armistice. That's all. It's not even, it's nothing, just an armistice. We are still technically, the United Nations is still technically at war with North Korea. There's never been a peace agreement. It's one of those flashpoints like the Middle East. But we don't know anything about the Korean conflict. It had the incredible misfortune of fitting between two major U.S. conflicts, World War II and Vietnam. And the sad fact is this country is chock-a-block still. They're dying off, not as quickly as World War II vets, but we are chock-a-block with Korean veterans. And it was only, what, in the last 10 years that any kind of a memorial was erected to these people, these soldiers, in D.C. But, my friend, you don't know anything about the Korean War. Neither do I. And it's designed that way. You know what I'm talking about. Nobody has ever done a Korean version of Apocalypse Now. Or a Korean version of The Longest Day. It's just kind of sandwiched in there, right? So many veterans from World War II thought they were finished with it all. 5 years later, back into service. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Never mind. Oh, yeah, we were talking about the efforts to limit the flow of news. Last week, Senator Bill Nelson, Democrat of Florida, tried to bring a small group of journalists with him on a trip he was taking through the Gulf on a Coast Guard vessel. Mr. Nelson's office said the Coast Guard agreed to accommodate the reporters and camera operators. But at about 10 p.m. on the evening before the trip, someone from the Department of Homeland Security's Legislative Affairs Office called the senator's office to tell him that no journalists would be allowed. Welcome back. 7 past the hour. All right, a couple of quick emails, and then we're going to come to, or I'm going to go to your phone calls. Michael writes, perhaps another reason why BP is getting treated by the administration the way it has been thus far is because one of the largest institutional investors in BP is BlackRock. And BlackRock is the firm picked to administer Wall Street bailout funds. Michael and Roswell. Now, in case I never heard of BlackRock during the break, did a quick Wikipedia. BlackRock is a global investment management firm based in New York City. As of this March, BlackRock's assets under management total $3.36 trillion U.S. dollars across equity, fixed income, cash management, alternative investment, real estate, and advisory strategies. Oh, and by the way, 34% of BlackRock, which is publicly traded, 34% is owned by Bank of America. BlackRock is the largest money manager in the world. See how small these circles are? Now tell me again, truth seeker. No, not truth seeker. Tell me again, right winger.
We live in America. We live in a democracy. You goddamn socialists, why don't you get off the radio? You don't know what you're talking about. You don't know anything. Get off the radio.
Adam writes, regarding Korea and Vietnam, Adam writes, first, the Vietnamese were paranoid about us repeating what was actually done to end the Korean War, the bombing of their dikes, a war crime killing unknown numbers. Thus, we at Stanford University were immediate in the forefront of protecting North Vietnam from such a horrendous repeat. We were successful, but still nobody knows much of nothing. At least I don't. Also, it's been 40 years since the Vietnamese desperately asked for help. All science available for birth defects, etc., from Agent Orange, which was already known then. Imagine how much longer it took the U.S. to admit any effect. Adam, yeah, well, part of the reason on Agent Orange, of course, was because if we admitted, you know, Agent Orange is what, pure dioxin or something? If we admitted that the defoliant, quote, that was the story back then. Oh, well, we have to get rid of that jungle canopy so we can see those little slant-eyed boogers and kill them. If the truth had been admitted by the United States government, I don't think they still admit it, then it would have opened the U.S. government up to all sorts of lawsuits, or at least open up the Veterans Administration to being forced to treat Vietnam veterans who are suffering from the deleterious effects of Agent Orange that they were forced to work with and defoliate North Vietnam with. Poor structure on the sentence there, but you get what I'm saying. So the U.S. government, under several presidents now, Democratic and Republican, have refused to acknowledge what good old, who was it, Dow Chemical? I think it was Dow Chemical, wasn't it? That's another company whose gifts just keep on giving. Huh? All right, now let me do this, and then we're going to go to your calls. Mike, I'm not a petroleum lawyer, and I don't play one on either TV or the internet, but here's my best guess about how it will go regarding BP's liability. The first and obvious question is how legislation will play out in Congress. After the Exxon Valdez disaster, federal law limited direct charges against the oil polluter to $75 million. There have been attempts to raise that amount recently to $10 billion, but no success, and frankly, I doubt that $10 billion will cover the direct and indirect losses. So it's inevitable that there will be a tort suit, probably a class action suit, which will have to wind its way through the courts. The Exxon Valdez case will probably be the precedent in all future British Petroleum lawsuits, unfortunately. ExxonMobil paid about $500 million in direct damages. And in the lower courts, juries awarded punitive damages of $5 billion. When the case finally reached the Supreme Court, the Roberts cohort reduced the punitive damages to one-tenth of that. $500 million. Is that right? Yeah. Effectively reducing the total award before calculating in 20 years' worth of inflation to one-tenth of the original award, and they've still not yet paid off completely on the lowered award made by the High Court. By the way, that $500 million was roughly 1.2% of ExxonMobil's one-year profit in 2008. As for seizing the entire BP operation, it's not likely. BP set up an American subsidiary, BP American, which was, in part, doing the drilling in the Gulf of Mexico, in order to shield the rest of BP from precisely the sort of lawsuit that might arise from this catastrophe. If there's any indication that Congress might retroactively find BP responsible, it's very likely that BP's lawyers would advise spinning off BP American and attaching all the losses to the American subsidiary and letting it go into bankruptcy, thus isolating the losses and protecting BP's profits elsewhere. They would still, very likely, try to separate BP's American refineries and retail gasoline outlets from the BP American offshore activities, perhaps by creating two separate companies, one for offshore drilling and one for retail and refining operations. Technically, such an effort would be illegal after the fact, but I'm reasonably sure they'll find a loophole around that. Congress won't put ironclad legislation in place that forces the courts to deal with BP straight up because it would affect all the oil companies. Too much total lobbying resistance to counter, I'm afraid. It's crummy, I know, but BP isn't going to pay but a few percent on the actual losses. One petrol lawyer has already said that Louisiana is effed, based on the Exxon Valdez case. In a sane world, someone would already have cut Tony Hayward's tripes out and told the rest of BP's board of directors that they're next if they don't do the right thing. But this is not a sane world. Corruption only serves the well-to-do. The rest of us just pay into the corrupt system one way or another. Michael in Roswell. In a much less articulate manner, I think Kathy and I have been talking about this, have come to the same conclusion that BP's not going to pay for a damn thing. Oh, they'll pay a few hundred million. The damage that's being done is, and perhaps this is the argument they may make in court, it's like the guy who murdered his parents and stood before the judge and asked for mercy because he was now an orphan. BP will probably make, as part of their defense, Your Honor, it can't be repaired, ever. Therefore, why try? I mean, that's what I would expect. All right, we're going to take a break and to your phone calls when we come back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. It's about 22 past the hour. Roz just sent me a story from Canada that you better sit down for this one. You remember that as a result of the Israeli military's attack on the Gaza flotilla and the deaths of 9 or 10 people, one of whom was a 19-year-old American citizen. As a result of that attack, there were a couple of rock and roll groups who canceled upcoming concerts in Israel. One of those groups was the Pixies. And at the time that the Pixies announced that they were canceling, the Israeli promoter of the concert, a guy named Shuki Weiss, I think it's a guy, said at the time, "I am full of both sorrow and pain in light of the fact that our repeated attempts to present quality acts and festivals in Israel have increasingly been falling victim to what I can only describe as a form of cultural terrorism, which is targeting Israel and the arts worldwide." End quote. That was the Pixies' Israeli promoter. Cultural terrorism because they decided not to play in Israel. Now comes this. The Canadian government announced that it is putting the alternative rock band, the Pixies, on its list of terrorist organizations after the group canceled its upcoming trip to Israel in the wake of the Gaza flotilla affair. It was the comment by the promoter that launched the Canadian move. Canadian Immigration Minister Jason Kenney told reporters today, quote, "Terrorism anywhere and in any form, whether it be physical, moral, verbal, mental, or cultural, is abhorrent to this government," end quote. Another supporter of this move, placing the Pixies band on its list of terrorist organizations, was Peter Kent, Minister of State for Foreign Affairs, the Americas, who said in an interview, quote, "If the Pixies want to boycott Israel, then Canada is at war with the Pixies," end quote. Asked if he was familiar with the Pixies' music, Mr. Kent replied that this was not germane to his decision. Quote, "I'm not familiar with Hezbollah leader Nasrallah's sermons, but I do know a terrorist when I see one," end quote. Jesus God! Thanks, Roz. So, it's the crazy people are not just here. The Israelis apparently have a death lock on the Canadian government as well as the U.S. government. So, if you are a Pixies fan, you either will be pleased or displeased, or neither, to find out that your alternative rock band, the Pixies, is now listed by the Canadian government as a terrorist organization. Oh, the Gorillaz, who are also going to play, Roz writes, they have been added to the list of terrorist organizations. Jesus God. The Pixies. A terrorist. Now, you know, we can make sardonic remarks and, you know, laugh up our sleeves and pretend like the Canadian government is as crazy as the U.S. government or the Israeli government. But the fact remains, being on an international terrorist watch list means how are the Pixies going to travel? What airline is going to say, "Oh, hi, you're the terrorist band. Sure, here's your boarding passes." Man. And we were thinking about moving to Vancouver? Okay. Check. That's off the list. Okay. What's left? Let's go where all the millionaires live, and that would be Singapore or Indonesia. Let's do that. You want to do that? Let's move there. Because then we can bask in the glow of knowing that we live in a country where the number of millionaires or billionaires is massive. And surely some of that will splash down or trickle down on us, right? We'll be right back with your phone calls. It is 25 before the hour. Michael says that the Pixie story is quite funny in a way, especially since the Canadian government has been complaining for years that the Israeli Mossad has been using forged or stolen Canadian passports to carry out its international schemes. Now, I know I've gotten a couple emails from a couple of Canadian citizens who say that the Pixie story has the smell of BS about it, and they're going to research it further. I'll go with Roz until we find out otherwise, if there is an otherwise. All right. John is in Los Angeles listening on KTOK. Hello, John.
Hi, Mike.
Hi.
I want to thank you for not playing this one commercial I heard on my radio station just now while I was on hold with you. I didn't hear it from your live feed.
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna. It's just that sometimes sometimes these commercials turn my stomach. But anyway,
the dating company.
No, recruitment.
Oh no, we don't play in those. No, that comes, I guess, from local affiliates.
Oh sure.
That carry our program.
But anyway, commercial radio. Ha. The one thing I wanted to mention, you said that earlier on the I'm an hour delayed over here in L.A.
Uh-huh.
You mentioned that there was no mention of that flotilla raid on the mass media, but I did watch Colbert, the funny guy, last night, and he had that topic on, and he interviewed this Israeli ambassador also.
Mm-hmm.
So he's mentioning it, so that's good. What you mentioned about those jackboots and the headshot
right.
That video is something that I wasn't aware of, and it's your website is MikeMalloy.com.
Yeah, MikeMalloy.com. The video is there. You can take a look at it. And,
I can't. I don't do the computer. But anyway, some people call me Luddite?
A good thing to be in these times.
But one thing I wanted to say about BP and this silly war on terror, they're throwing around definitions of who's a terrorist and, you know, the hypocrisy of this whole Israeli raid and all. It just all merges. What I would like to pose is that BP, as well as a lot of other, whether it's economic terrorists like banks or eco-terrorists as BP or political terrorists, they should be called terrorist groups also. If not, they should be called neo-terrorists, another name for instead of, you know,
right,
just
right.
some guy with a tennis shoe or a goat in his backyard.
Mm-hmm.
I'm getting a little bit tired of the hypocrisy of this war of terror, on terror, whatever.
Well, yeah, it's a smokescreen. It has no basis in reality whatsoever, just like the Department of Homeland Security has no basis of in reality whatsoever.
Yeah. Dirty joke.
Yeah, it is. It is started by the Bush crime family. And rejiggered and made even more fascist during the Obama administration. And it is just another indication that this country is slipping, rolling into a corporatist or neo-fascist state that was so admired by people like Mussolini.
Well, the formal terrorist word was maybe started by them, but, you know, going back throughout the ages, we've always had to have a boogeyman to be afraid of to keep the powers in power in this country. Now, the one comment I also wanted to make was a question to you, is that if BP were nationalized, and since the government is so controlled, and has always been so controlled by the big, you know, big control freaks, whether they're corporations or whatever, wouldn't this nationalized BP just be another indirect corporate under indirect corporate control?
Mm-hmm.
Because the government is corporate. So it's all one big, you know, circle, dog chasing its tail thing.
Yeah.
Breaking the bayou to buy the bayou so they can pump more oil, get the people out, whatever. You know, whether Barack does it.
Yeah.
Good old Barack. Or whether Tony or whatever, that guy, not Tony Blair, but Tony Hayworth or whatever.
Hayward, yeah.
It is still all just the same, but, anyway, that's all I have to say. It is this the terrorist needs to be really looked at, and that's, I think, what these corporations and these banks are.
Oh, sure. It's very easy to identify the companies, the corporations you're talking about as terrorist, their activities. But capitalism is a terrorist enterprise. Conservatism is really, truly a terrorist enterprise. Capitalism devours people. It destroys natural resources. It destroys families. It destroys nations. It eats them alive. If that's not a terrorist organization, such a thing does not exist. Thanks, John. All right, now I'm starting to get the emails that the Pixie story is satire. I don't know. We'll find out. Simon says, the only reference to the story I can find online is at this Australian website, AustraliansForPalestine.com. But then Simon says, it appears to be satire from these quotes, and he quotes the same ones I said. Then he said, Simon lives in Canada. Simon says, come on, Mike, have more faith in us. It's not you, pal. I'm not having no faith in Canadians, just like I certainly don't not have faith in Americans. Well, some of them I don't have faith in. It's the government. We'll find out. It's either true or not true. I still thank Roz for sending it, because it's the kind of story that could very easily be true if it isn't. And I'll go with the report that it is true until we find out otherwise. Fair enough. Eric is in Hunting Beach, Cal. Is it Huntington or Hunting?
Tomato, tomato. Doesn't matter.
Okay.
Huntington.
Huntington Beach, California. Listening on KTLK. Hey, Eric.
Hey, Mike. I was calling about the Coast Guard Commandant, Admiral Thad Allen.
Yeah.
First and foremost, he is the quote-unquote first responder as the head of a quote-unquote branch of military for this BP or Gulf disaster. You played a clip, which, you know, I liked, which was about the, well, I didn't like it. I'm upset about it, but, you know, it goes to the heart of the issue about the senator that was going to go out in the Gulf and bring some journalists with him.
Nelson. And yeah.
Exactly. But what happened 50, 60 days ago when this all started, 50 going into 60, Admiral Allen, as the head of the Coast Guard, was named as the National Incident Commander, mm-hmm. whatever that is, and I'm not sure what agency or branch that is with, but he's stepping down as a Coast Guard Commandant, which was planned. He's served his 4 years, and now it's time to turn it over to Admiral Papp. But he's going to maintain his title and position as the National Incident Commander, and I'm not sure, you know, to me it's kind of like what they did with General Hayden, where they took him out of a general in uniform, serving at the time, out of uniform, made him head of the CIA, and then said, oh, by the way, you can keep your uniform.
Right, right, right.
And I would ask that people really look at what's going on with the Coast Guard, where under Bush it's been militarized, it's supposed to be a civil service, and it's actually carrying on a lot of police and regulatory powers as a branch of military. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, whether it is or not, I'm saying it's not supposed to be, it's supposed to be a civil service, but they're out there declaring, and there's a lot of people defending, that it's supposedly a branch of military. But Coast Guard Commandant Thad Allen also got an award from the National Defense Industries Association, a 1,365 member organization of federal military contractors, and it was literally for turning a civil service into a branch of military overnight under the cloud of the war in Iraq in 2003.
I give up.
The end of the war.
I swear to God, Eric, I give up. I mean, it just, well, I don't really give up, but these wheels just keep turning and turning, and you know who gets ground up in these wheels, right? Eric, thanks, man. I got a break. Appreciate your call. Before the hour, John is in Glendale, Arizona, listening online. Hey, John.
Hey, I'm here. Thank you.
Yeah. Yes. Hello.
Hello, and good to talk to you. You've got a great program, and I'm glad to get through. I have a good friend throughout Arizona here that he and I talk quite a bit about how great your program is, but I've been running for Congress. This is my third time out, and I'm running against Trent Franks. I'm also running for the people and the voters that don't get any representation here.
Yeah.
But this has been a very difficult area. We are getting the negative notoriety, starting with immigration, and Arizona doesn't really have, I would say, the perfect image of what America is. But we'll get through this. I just don't think bad bills stand up.
Uh-huh.
And so I think as this goes through Congress and they reevaluate the 1070, I think it's a good idea that we are very careful about illegals coming from anywhere. There's no question about that. But how we handle certain parts of this bill is critical. And I think this one is like the California bill that went through, and for 10 years they haven't been able to even deal with it because it has too much profiling and bigotry, and those types of bills just do not survive.
Well, that's good news, John. And just one small criticism here. I try on this program, and perhaps your friend would know this who told you about this program. I try on this program to stay away from the word illegals in reference to undocumented workers. And I'll tell you why. It has nothing to do with political correctness. It has to do with the fact that illegals presumes a conclusion. It presumes that a decision was made, evidence was presented, and a person was declared to be in the country illegally. So I'm just very uncomfortable with the term illegal. If this offends you, I apologize. But until it is established by a court that someone has entered the country illegally, as an adverb, I don't have a problem with the word illegal or illegally or as an adjective. But as a definition of a person, I'm sorry. I'm just not comfortable with that at all. It smacks too much of the attitudes towards the Jews in Germany back in the 30s, does it not? It smacks too much of the Palestinians in occupied their own country now. I mean, it just goes on and on. And at some point, and for me, it's like now, it's time to make an attempt anyway to not continue to use these memes, these descriptive terms that are so crushingly inhuman. So I don't believe there's anything. It's like calling a baby illegitimate because its parents were not married. That's nonsense. And to call someone an illegal who is in this country without the proper papers, I can't go there. No offense. I mean, my people at one time were called WOPs. W-O-P. WOP. Do you know what that means? What it stood for? Without papers. So, can't go there. But I appreciate you checking in. I do indeed. All right, we have all kinds of lines ringing, and we just, you want to grab one? We've got about a minute and a half. You want to see, you'll never, okay, never mind. To hell with it. It always works this way, doesn't it? We get down to the wire and still getting calls. But that's all right. I mean, I certainly appreciate it. Oh, wait a minute. Here comes somebody. We do have a bit of time. I think possibly, maybe. Well, Kathy's finding out if he's friend or foe. I don't like the term illegal at all. Even if someone is found to be in this country illegally, I don't like it. There we go. John's in Richmond, Indiana. John, welcome to the program.
Yes, thank you.
Sure.
Mike?
Yeah.
Let me turn my radio down. I'm driving right now.
Okay.
I heard a lot of, over the past 6 weeks or whatever it's been, that they haven't been able to cap this well. I've heard a lot of solutions, some of them quite ridiculous, and I have one that borders on satire. I don't want to minimize.
If you can get it in 30 seconds, go ahead.
Sure. Well, okay. What I think we could do is corner all the vinegar futures. And then what we would do is we would go to Arizona, and there's more than a willing labor pool out there. I mean, Arizona doesn't want them.
Oh, God.
We could we could send them across state lines to northern Louisiana.
Wait a second. I think the music is starting. That sounds like a great idea, John. Vinegar and oil. That's wonderful. Oh, Jesus. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy.
I'm Jim Cook.